Last week, a woman was found guilty of forcing a group of young overseas students into sexual servitude in a Sydney brothel. It's hard to get a handle on the number of women subject to sex trafficking in Australia. They can be lured initially here under false pretenses, perhaps on a student visa, but they find themselves forced to work effectively as sex slaves. How do they get trapped? Why can't they get out? Project Respect is an organisation based in Melbourne focused on seeking out and supporting women in this very dire situation. But Project Respect is about much more than that. They also support and help out female sex workers, generally all female sex workers, and they were recently recognised for their work with the Social Impact Award in the inaugural HESTA Community Sector Awards. And Kelly Hinton is Project Respect's Executive Director, and she joins us now. Welcome, Kelly.
Good morning.
Hello there. What is it that you're trying to achieve with Project Respect?
I think basically we're trying to help a lot of very vulnerable women to access supports and services so that they do have genuine choice and freedom to do what they want to do.
Genuine choice, we might come back to that, but let's start with some of the very practical things that you are doing. What sorts of services and support you offer to help women in the sex work industry?
Sure. So we provide outreach into the sex industry, which is mainly into legal brothels in Melbourne. And we just talk to the women there, see if they need information or advice or assistance with anything. And then from there, a lot of women contact us for individual ongoing support for a whole range of issues. And basically, we do whatever they want help with.
Well, what sorts of issues do they need your support in? Because it's very broad.
It's massively broad. It can be anything from being in a violent relationship to having housing issues to needing to access drug or alcohol assistance to trafficking and wanting to speak to the police or needing help to get out of a situation.
And we'll come to the sex trafficking question in just a tick. But I was also interested to see, Kelly, that you run training and awareness for service providers
Yes.
that women sex workers might utilise. So, health centres, legal centres. Why is that so important? Do they have particular assumptions about this group of women?
There's so many myths and so much stigma around the sex industry. Most of the women that we work with won't actually access mainstream services because they're so afraid of disclosing that they're in the sex industry and the stigma or discrimination they might face. So a lot of our work is about raising awareness with our experiences in working with women in the sex industry, what the sex industry is really like, and also to alert around issues of trafficking.
Well, let's take the health centre situation as an example. What sorts of things would you be imparting to them to help them better understand the health needs of women in the sex industry?
Look, it's really about what our experience and knowledge is about. They are the experts on health, so we wouldn't be lecturing them on health, but more around what the sex industry is like, using the right terminology and not discriminating and making a woman feel comfortable and treating her just like any other woman.
Mm. I was interested, Kelly, to see one of your aims is to promote policies and practices which reduce the conditions that cause the sex industry to thrive. And some might see that as a sort of counter to your other goal of supporting and sustaining the well-being of women in the industry. There's a paradox here.
That's right. So we support women in the sex industry, but most of the women that we meet and work with have experienced harm or damage within the sex industry. We don't support the sex industry itself or promote people going to the sex industry.
That is a paradox, though, isn't it? Because many sex workers, or particularly the more outspoken members of the sex work community, argue that this is work that they want to do and they want to have that choice. Thank you very much.
Sure. And look, there's a diversity of experiences in the sex industry, and I think it's fantastic that there's a diversity of voices publicly representing different experiences. It's not a one-size-fits-all issue like so many issues out there.
Mm. Let's come to trafficking, and I might pick up on that point that you've just made a little later, but I really want to highlight this issue of sex trafficking in Australia. I don't think that many people kind of have heard about it, but they don't know whether it's happening in a street near them. Advocating very vocally over many years now on this issue. What sorts of circumstances can women find themselves in?
Look, trafficking in Australia has seemed to change over a number of years, but essentially it's still It's the same elements. So women are coming to Australia. Sometimes they know they'll be in the sex industry. Sometimes they have no idea, but they certainly don't understand that they'll be required to pay off a large debt, that they won't have any choice in terms of the hours they work or the days they work or the services that they provide. And the fear and the lack of ability to leave the situation is so scary for so many women, and the fear for their family or friends back home. Originally, it was more traffickers were taking women's passports and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Now they're not necessarily doing that, but the fear of danger to themselves or their families is so, so great that they won't leave even if they have their passport and the door is open.
Let's try and give some specifics to the sorts of situations. So what about the situation of young women having no idea what they're getting into? What is a typical scenario that you see?
So women that have no idea they'll be in the sex industry often think they're coming here to be either in hospitality or work as a nanny or that sort of thing. They'll come through the airport, they'll be picked up by someone who they'll have been told has arranged their employment, and then they're either taken straight to a brothel or to a private apartment, told how much money that they owe, and then what they'll have to be doing to pay off that money.
Pretty much on the day they land.
Yes.
And what sort of visas are they coming in on?
The women we've met are normally on a student visa or working holiday visa, so they are legally allowed to work. And in Victoria, where the sex industry is legalised, it's legal for them to be working there.
Right, so they arrive on a student visa, so they end up in a brothel situation?
Usually, yes.
And how is it that they're forced to stay? Like, what's the dynamic that's set up here?
So they're threatened, they're often physically assaulted, their families back home are threatened, and they're just beaten down until they feel that this is the only option to survive and to get through is to do what they're told they have to do, pay off their debt as quickly as possible, and then hopefully make some money before they return home, and often they just hope that no one back home finds out.
Have you tracked women right through this cycle? So once they've paid off the debt, so to speak, what happens then?
Really varies. Sometimes women just want to leave the country and go back home and try and forget about it. Sometimes they stay in the sex industry because they figure the damage has already been done, so they may as well make some money. And sometimes they exit the sex industry and try and find some employment doing something else to make some money before they return home.
How do you get access to these women? Because that's been one of the difficulties here. This is such a sort of hidden situation.
Absolutely. So when we provide outreach to the sex industry generally and we just talk to women, that's an opportunity for women to get to know our faces. However, there's no legal requirement for brothels to let us in. So if they are having trafficked women there, there's a good incentive not to let us in. Mm. But because we've been around and we've worked with so many women for so many years now, there's a lot of word of mouth that gets around within the sex industry. A lot of women within the sex industry know what trafficking looks like and will pass on our phone number to women that they think need help.
So once you make contact with a woman in that situation, what are you able to do? And we'll come to your kind of wider policy advocacy around this, but at that individual level, if a group of women are stuck in a situation, I'm thinking of the situation in Sydney,
yep,
that was exposed last week, you know, a whole group of students just stuck in a brothel, it sounded. What yep. Can you do? How do you get them out of that situation? How do you protect them?
Look, it's really, we don't get them out and we don't protect them. Right. It's not like we rush in there and rescue them and pull them out. Right. Often it's a little bit of the way along before we find out, because there's the women that come here that have been trafficked have been deceived sometimes by people they knew or friends of friends. And so it's a matter of building up trust before we even know what happened. If we knew about a woman that was in immediate danger, we'd be calling the Australian Federal Police human trafficking team.
What does immediate danger look like?
If we knew of a woman who was trapped and fearful and couldn't get out and sexually enslaved.
One of the Victoria has responded to this issue. There has been government movement. In Victoria, there was an inquiry into people trafficking for sex work, which the government responded to in 2011. Has there been further movement since then on any of the key recommendations out of that inquiry?
So the government established the Victoria Police Sex Industry Coordination Unit. That was part of their response, and part of that unit's mandate is to look for trafficking and other illegal activity in the sex industry. I believe they've also changed the signs that are required to be in brothels around sexual slavery, which formerly the translated versions were only in common areas of the brothel. So essentially if a woman wanted to note down the police phone number, she'd have to do it in front of her traffickers. That's now changed. It's in every room of the brothel. In terms of support for women and resources for women, there hasn't really been that much. It's been more of a law and order response.
Right. And has there been a crackdown on any of this practice in Victoria since?
In terms of a crackdown, it comes back to the underground nature of trafficking. Mm. And when you're talking about women who perhaps come from countries where the sex industry is illegal, they're told that police here are corrupt, perhaps police back in their home country are corrupt. So police doing visits and trying to develop relationships with women is a good idea, but you can't get rid of that ultimate fear of talking to the police and potentially maybe they'll be protected, but what happens to their family back home if the traffickers know where they are?
Kelly Hinton is my guest on Life Matters this morning. She's Executive Director of Project Respect. They are involved in supporting women in the sex industry in Victoria and also really advocating and trying to respond to the challenge of sex trafficking in Australia too. Obviously, this is a global story because the traffickers are based in both Australia and overseas. Have you attempted to work in a more global way in terms of advocating around this issue of sex trafficking, like actually going to the source of the problem?
Look, we do as much as we possibly can, bearing in mind we're a very small NGO with very limited resources.
Yes, fair point.
But certainly it is important, and also important on the grassroots level in terms of supporting women, because if women are accessing support here and then decide to return home for whatever reason, we want to make sure that, one, they're not at a risk of being re-trafficked, but two, they're also not going to be punished when they get home for being in the sex industry. So one of the things that we've been doing is trying to work with NGOs in other countries where women are coming from to make sure that we can refer them to NGOs that would work with them in a similar manner to the way we do.
You're advocating for a more humane response to sex trafficking. They're the words that you use. So what does that mean? Is that partly what you were just saying?
Absolutely. And it's about looking at what's best for the survivor of trafficking, not necessarily what's best in terms of criminal justice processes, which absolutely are important in terms of trying to prevent future trafficking. But we need to look at the impact on the individual and what's best for them and what they actually think's best for them.
Let's come to some of the reforms around sex work generally. Project Respect has been advocating for the so-called Swedish model of prostitution laws, I gather. It's actually
Yes.
against the law to buy sex in Sweden.
That's correct.
So tell us about your advocacy around that. So would you like to see the sex work? Is your ultimate goal to see the end of the sex work sector in Australia?
Yes and no. In terms of the Swedish model, our advocacy around that was always basically theoretical and based on the research that we'd seen, and that it seemed to be a great model that recognised the gender inequality in terms of it's mainly women in the sex industry and mainly men going to the sex industry. Plus our experience in that a lot of the women in the sex industry are there because of need, financial need usually, and inability to get the money they need in another manner. Mm. So it sounded like a great model. We actually received some funding to send one of our staff members over to Sweden to see if it's actually working and what women think of it, and what is it something we could do here, or is it completely unrealistic?
And what did you conclude?
Look, we're in the process of compiling that. It's really complicated. I guess in theory, the model does sound great. In terms of implementation, there have been a lot of challenges, and certainly if we were going to advocate that it was implemented in Australia, it would be about looking at what worked and what didn't work over there.
Mm. Just finally, what do you think absolutely needs to happen in relation to the sex trafficking issue in Australia? What do you think would fundamentally make a difference?
I think we need to really, well, I think there's a few things. I think we need to be talking about it. As you mentioned at the start of the segment, most people don't even know that it's happening in Australia. When you talk about trafficking, people automatically think of Cambodia or Thailand or somewhere like that. And recognising that, one, it is an issue in Australia, actually talking about it and not shying away from the fact because we're talking about sex or the sex industry, but talking about it quite openly and what's happening. But I think also we need to look at, why is it so profitable? Why is there a demand for women who cannot say no to particular sexual services? And actually examining that rather than just looking at the women and visas and all the stuff around the women. But let's look around the people that are making money from this and also the people that are purchasing sexual services from trafficked women.
And we didn't really even get to the question of for those women who actually choose to come here to do sex work. That would have been another interesting dynamic to explore. Together. Kelly Hinton, thank you very much for joining us on Life Matters this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Kelly is the Executive Director of Project Respect. More information on the Life Matters website about that, abc.net.au/radionational.